from KQED.
This is the California Report. Good morning. I'm John Sepulveda.
And I'm Julia Scott.
And all this week in our series Beyond Me Too, focusing on sex, power, and abuse in California, we've had several men's voices on the show reflecting on this question. What does it mean to be a man?
You know, I think that in the wake of Me Too, that's a highly relevant question and deserving of serious thought. Actually, Andrew Sullivan had a controversial column this month pointing to the indelible differences between men and women.
Andrew Sullivan, of course, the famous conservative essayist.
You know, and he says those differences stem from, of all things, our different levels of testosterone.
Wait a minute, the testosterone that's coursing through my body right now is what makes me a man?
Well, that's his argument.
Okay, so you were telling me about someone else who's been actually testing this testosterone theory. And let's hear that.
So this is a story about a man named Eric Trefelner.
Eric Trefelner. Okay, where's he from?
He lives in Montara, California, in the San Mateo County coast, about an hour south of San Francisco.
Okay.
So Eric Trefelner always sort of felt out of place around other boys when he was growing up. And he hated team sports. And he was gay, but that wasn't the issue. He just felt like he was missing something. And that feeling followed him into adulthood.
I used to always have these dreams where I was near men. They were in a group distant from me. But I would feel so sad and wake up crying, literally, because I was separated from the world of men.
A few years ago, he decided he didn't like the way he looked, like a version of the skinny kid he used to be. So at the suggestion of his personal trainer, Trefelner started taking testosterone shots to help him build muscle.
All right, so we'll put 2 10s on it and 2 5s. We'll do like 6 to 8 reps. Is that all right?
Nice. Trefelner has a little home gym in a shed near his house in Montara, and he invited me over. He says the hormones were an experiment, and he wasn't expecting much. He wasn't expecting they would change everything.
And all of a sudden, I loved exercising. And I was at times exercising 8 hours a day. I'd do 2 hours in the morning, 2 hours in the afternoon, 2 hours at night, and sometimes 2 hours even later at night. I mean, most people feel better, but I felt like a completely different person.
And that different person was the man Trefelner had always wanted to be. It wasn't just the new muscles, it was everything.
I had more energy. I felt more powerful. I felt more sexual. I felt more ability to take risks.
All right, Julia, let me jump in real quick. We just heard Eric Trefelner say that he felt more powerful and he felt more sexual. And that's exactly what we're looking at in this series, that intersection. So he's saying that testosterone made him feel those things in a way that he hadn't felt them before?
Exactly. He attributes it completely to the testosterone, which he thinks he was actually lacking in enough levels of before. So he actually compares it to being a blind man his whole life without knowing it. And all of a sudden, he could see color. He could see light.
I was feeling more comfortable with men. Before, I used to feel in the gym sort of scrawny and out of place. And now, all of a sudden, I was part of a tribe.
He'd always felt like a man, but he felt a kind of communion and acceptance he'd missed as a kid.
And all of a sudden, I was feeling like, this is what it's like to be a man.
Julia, that's really interesting. I can imagine many people weren't expecting that.
You know, I don't think that he was either. I mean, was he just discovering something that had lived inside him all along? You know, he's since gone off the testosterone, and he says he feels like his former self again before he was injecting himself.
So I guess what you're saying is you can be a man without really feeling like one, like biologically a man, but maybe you don't feel that way when you go to bed or get up in the morning.
Yeah, I guess that's true. And it got me wondering, what's it like to feel like a man without beginning life as one? I talked to someone else who described what that's like.
When I was around 5, I asked everyone to call me Bob, and that was so natural.
Addison Bowe is a writer who works and lives in Palo Alto, and you know, he's had a lot of time to think about what kind of a man he wants to be his whole life, actually.
I mean, I've always been masculine, more from the inside, so I've always felt that way.
So when he turned 40, he told me that he felt the time was right to come out as a man to his parents. He changed his name and got top surgery. And after some hesitation, he also started taking testosterone shots.
Before even taking testosterone, that was the thing I needed to understand for myself about this process, is that I was born with an awareness and also a condition of a testosterone deficiency that I am now correcting.
The hormones were just the finishing touch, actually, because Beau's gender transition has taken a lifetime, and he says it's still in process.
Essentially, I'm going through puberty in my early 40s. I was hoping that I would look like Ryan Gosling immediately, but that didn't happen. I'm just going to end up looking like my dad.
But Beau is not a new person. Unlike Trefelner, you know, he wasn't shocked to feel like a man. He never perceived himself as anything but.
Hormones do not necessarily make the man.
All right, Julia, so I'm thoroughly confused. We have one person who says hormones do make them feel, quote unquote, more manly. Another person who says, no, that's not the case. It really seems that it depends on what your definition of being a man is.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think it's a question that every man has to ask himself and answer on a subjective basis.
A question that's not going to be answered right now. Julia Scott, we're out of time. Thank you.
Support for the California Report comes from Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems. The James Irvine Foundation, expanding economic and political opportunity for Californians who are working but struggling with poverty. More at irvine.org. And CCRM, a national fertility treatment clinic now open in the Bay Area. CCRM San Francisco helps build families. CCRMIVF.com/San Francisco.
Governor Jerry Brown is proposing a new way for Californians to go to college. He spoke about it in his final State of the State address yesterday, as KQED's Katie Orr reports.
Brown says there are 2.5 million Californians between the ages of 25 and 34 who are working but lack a college degree. To help close that gap, Brown wants to create an online community college. He says the option would be convenient and more affordable for many students.
These men and women often go out of state and pay high tuition at for-profit institutions to improve their skills and employability.
Brown has earmarked $120 million in his recent budget proposal to establish the program. The plan would be for students to begin enrolling in late 2019 and work on certificate programs. In previous years, Brown has promoted online classes to increase access at state colleges and universities. This was Brown's 16th and final State of the State as he begins his last year in office. He also took the opportunity to reaffirm his support for both his high-speed rail and Delta Tunnel projects, both of which face obstacles. For the California Report, I'm Katie Orr in Sacramento.
Let's go now to Los Angeles, where six of the top candidates to replace Governor Jerry Brown next year battled it out on stage at UCLA for over an hour at a gubernatorial forum. The event focused on Latino issues, and much of the night's attention turned to immigration reform. Here's KPCC's Mary Plummer.
It was an aggressive and at times vicious debate with Democratic frontrunners Antonio Villaraigosa, former mayor of Los Angeles, and Gavin Newsom, lieutenant governor and former mayor of San Francisco, frequently attacking each other on everything from health care to their business earnings. One of the flashpoints came when Univision moderator Jorge Ramos brought two attendees forward on stage, possibly dreamers, it wasn't clear, and pressed State Assemblyman Travis Allen on his immigration views. The crowd egged him on, chanting yes or no. Allen, one of two Republicans on stage, responded mentioning the two young people by name. He suggested a solution is near for immigrants brought here illegally as children.
Eric and Marcella, what I would tell you is your president of the United States, the duly elected president, is working on a deal right now.
Allen went on to say deporting them was not the job of the governor of the state of California. The debate was presented in English and Spanish by Univision and the Latino Community Foundation. There are about 15 million Latinos in California, and nearly half are eligible to vote. For the California Report, I'm Mary Plummer in Los Angeles.
We're going to look now at an unsettling story that begins like this. A woman goes to the doctor and complains of postpartum depression, and the nurse calls the police. KQED's April Domboski picks up the story from here.
I With her first daughter, everything was fine. But 4 months after having her second, Jessica Porton started feeling really irritable at little things, like the baby's glider chair.
And it had started to squeak. And so when I'm sitting there rocking the baby and it's squeaking, I would just get so angry at that stupid chair.
She read online that this could be a symptom of postpartum depression. So she went to a women's clinic in Sacramento.
I briefly described my symptoms and said that I wanted to talk about medication options and therapy.
She admitted to the nurse that she was having some violent thoughts.
I had described, you know, maybe hitting myself or squeezing the baby too tight, but I was very adamant through the entire appointment that I was not going to hurt myself and I was not going to hurt my children.
But that's when everything changed.
I could almost see at that moment that she stopped listening to me.
The nurse called the police. The police escorted Porton and her baby to the Sutter emergency room. Hospital staff took her things and put her under watch to wait for a social worker.
It's like everybody knows that I'm not crazy. Everybody knows that this is normal, but they're following protocol.
Finally, at midnight, 10 hours after she first got to the doctor's office, she was sent home. She says the whole thing made her feel like a criminal.
It was all legality. Everybody was protecting their own liability instead of thinking of me.
A Sutter spokesman says yes, the staff was following protocol, and every step was about keeping everyone safe. He also says long wait times are not unusual. The doctor's office, capital OBGYN, declined to comment. UCSF psychiatrist Melanie Thomas says when patients reference violent thoughts, it forces doctors to think about things in a different way. If there is imminent danger to a child, they are required to report it.
But you can imagine how a provider or a social worker, any number of people might interpret that phrase in different ways about what is necessary to report and what isn't.
Lawmakers in Sacramento are trying to bring some clarity to identifying and treating maternal mental health conditions. Assemblyman Brian Mainshine wants doctors to screen new moms for depression, and he wants to get federal money for new programs and awareness campaigns.
The numbers here are so significant.
As many as 1 in 4 women in California have prenatal or postpartum depression.
That I think it's something that doctors really should understand and should be prepared to both diagnose and to treat.
This is what Jessica Porton wants. People have told her she should sue her doctor's office. But she says no. She thinks getting the bills passed is the way to help the clinic do a better job. For the California Report, I'm April Dymbosky in Sacramento.
And that's the California Report for Friday, January 26th, a production of KQED Public Radio. Our engineers are Katie McMurrin, Danny Bringer, with additional engineering from Howard Gelman and Seal Muller. I'm John Sepulvedo. Have a great weekend.